episode 113 of Coffee and Co-Read, your source for all things literary, with Catherine
and Kristen, where we believe there's nothing better than a hot coffee and an awesome book. Join us for a virtual book club where we take one book a month and dive into all the drama, adventure, and romance that we can find. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, Kristen.
I've got a case of the giggles today.
That's fun. I loved it. I loved your enthusiasm. Big fan.
Thanks, man. Okay, so today we're talking about something relevant.
Yes.
We're talking about misprints.
Yeah.
Misprints.
Yeah. Like, in the vast amount of books that I own, I think it's only happened to me this one time.
Yeah.
That I've actually had an issue that is clearly, like, the printer place made an issue with a book. But it was with this book, Kingdom of the Wicked. And, like, there's four pages in the book that are just, like, stuck together on the bottom. And then it looks like someone took crinkly scissors. You know when you used to be able to get, like, a 24-pack of scissors and they all had different patterns?
Yeah.
It looks like someone used one of those on top of it. And it's just weird. But anyway, there's just four pages like that. But it was, like, super easy. I just, like, messaged the bookstore and was like, hey, there's something wrong with the printing. And they didn't even ask for, like, pictures or anything. And they just sent me a new one.
Yeah.
Actually, the only other time that that happened was one time I ordered a series of books. And, like, a box set. And they, like, I think it was a Canada Post issue, but it said that they were lost. So I went back to the store and was like, hey, Canada Post lost them. And they just sent me a new one. But then the old one showed up too. So I had two copies of the series.
Yeah.
And they gave one to you.
You did.
Yes.
It's true. That happened.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, you hear about a lot of it. Like, I can't remember so much with the new Crescent City book, but Iron Flame, a lot of people had issues, it seemed like. Or, like, on the internet, obviously, you're going to see more. But, like, if people are rushing to get books out, kind of like I feel like that one was, it seems like there are issues with them sometimes. Wasn't Iron Flame the one where, like, some people had, like, the book was upside down?
Mm-hmm.
Was that one?
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just wild.
But then, I have heard of the same issue, though, with Crescent mm-hmm. City 3. Like, not to the same extent, but people were posting online, like, oh, look, my book is misprinted, like, sent, you know, like, it was definitely happening. And I think you sort of have a point, like, this whole, like, the commodity of pre-ordering and, like, people, like, being so hyped and excited for books to come out. So then the printers are like, well, shit, we got to get, like, 500,000 books out to these people who pre-ordered it. I mean, there's going to be some, like, quality control issues, I feel like.
Well, yeah. Out of, like, the hundreds of books I own, to only ever get one misprint seems wild. So, like, I'm sure the stats of it are not often. But then the other part of it is, like, do you keep them? Are they then, like, special? Which is another.
This is the thing. And I mean, like, that book that you got, like, the pages, it was like you could, like, the pages were, like, stuck together and, like, sort of in half. So, like, to me, that seems like a defect.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, to me, I wouldn't, like, obviously I know you're going to hold on to that book, but, like, to me, a book like that would not be considered collectible because it's, like, but people are obsessed with finding, like, grammatical errors and, like, spelling mistakes in books. And I'm like, if reading is a struggle for you and that spelling mistake or that, you know, should have been a comma, but it was a semicolon, that is really troublesome for you because of your reading ability, fine, I get it. But I don't understand why people feel the need to, like, scour through books just mm-hmm. to look for, like, and then you get, so, like, then I get in the groups I'm on, people are posting and being like, this is grammatically incorrect. Like, I think the most recent one was people have an issue with the word loosed. Like, I loosed a breath or something like that. Like,
oh, okay.
L-O-O-S. Yeah, like, it's L-O-O-S-E-D. It is a word, but people are like, this isn't, it's loosened. Loosed, I found a spelling mistake. It's like, no, you didn't. You just don't understand all the grammar and syntax of the world, which is fine.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't understand what people's goals are. Is it to alert the editor that they found a spelling mistake so then they can reprint the whole book and then, oh, you've got a special one because yours still has the spelling mistake inside. Mm-hmm. I don't get why. Like, why is that required?
And, like, I feel really bad for these, like, indie authors who, like, they don't have the million-dollar editors like the Sarah J. Masses. So, like, there are sometimes spelling mistakes or any other kind of mistakes. And, like, even in the front of those books, you'll usually see, if you find a mistake, send an email here. But, like, I'm sure people are constantly posting on social media being like, there's a mistake on this page. And I'm sure that the authors are like, I've been told 50,000 times. Like, there's, what am I supposed to do now, though? Like, for Kindle, I guess I have no idea if you can, like, pull your book, change a word and put it back on. I don't know how anything works.
Story of our lives. Don't we don't know
nothing.
How anything
I know how nothing
works.
But yeah, I do think, like, people trying to find first editions of older books by looking for certain mistakes or something like that. Like, I understand that to a degree, to be like, oh, if it has this, it is a first printing. Like, there's something with a Harry Potter book that I don't remember, but, like, there's a word or something, which makes sense. But I don't know. I'm not really into, like, first editions or, like, I guess if I had, like, a first edition of, like, Sarah J. Maas or on a glass, but then I'm like, none of the other covers match the first cover, and the first cover is kind of ugly, so I don't really care to get it. If I found it and it was cheap, sure, but I wouldn't spend over $20 on it, and $20 is, like, the price of a regular book.
Yeah. I know. I see people selling stuff online for, like, $9,500, and I'm like, why? like, I see it for, like a Pride and Prejudice first edition, I'd be all over it.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I still don't think I'd spend the money.
If I had the money.
Yeah.
Like, if I won the lottery.
Yeah.
And became a 100 millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And had money to burn. That's probably one of the things I would do.
Yeah.
I would go out hunting for a first edition Pride and Prejudice. But that's like an antique, right? That's like a 200-year-old book at this point.
You also wouldn't need a job, so that could be your job. You need a purpose in life, so.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like all of these books that have come out in the past 20 years, like, I mean, unless people are hoping that their value will exponentially increase in the next like 80 years. I don't get it, but I guess all books have to start somewhere. Maybe the people in the 19th century were also like, oh, that book's coming out. I need it first so that I can keep it for my children's children when it will finally be worth money.
Yeah. We do buy, obviously, when books come out, we buy them because we want to read them and we don't want spoilers. So, like, we have early editions of all of the new books.
Yeah.
But, like, I do not care at all about that.
No.
I don't.
No. We got them because we wanted to read them as soon as possible.
Yeah. That's funny. But, yeah. So that's a conversation we just had.
That's our feelings on that.
On all of that stuff. And I guess just a heads up, this is not a spoiler-free zone, and things might get saucy. Maybe?
Nah. Very, very slightly.
Things get hot. For a second.
For a hot minute.
And then they ruin it. Okay, so last week... wait, no. This is the last week. Killing it.
That was good.
This is, yeah, the last week of Kingdom of the Wicked. We're doing chapters 37 to 48, which is the end. And last week, a bunch of stuff happened.
Did it?
It always does, doesn't it? I don't know.
I guess.
I guess Amelia is working with Wrath. She, oh yeah, they found Claudia's cousin dead. And I think another witch died as well. Yeah. So, like, they're doing a poor job saving these witches. Like, yeah, they're
dropping like flies.
They really are. You'd think someone would try something more. But no. what happens? Amelia decides to go live with Wrath and just tells her family, peace out, goodbye.
And no one goes looking for her.
Nobody gives a fuck. Somebody steals Victoria's diary. And Amelia goes out and Lust is there, which is funny because he's not one of the ones that's named as dangerous to her in the beginning, but he, like, fucked her up. It seemed kind of like a depression spell after Lust, because, like, Lust is, like, all the pleasure in the world, and then it's gone. So then she was in a depression for, like, 2 or 3 weeks, and Wrath helped her out of it, because he knows some magic-y things. So he put her in a bath with all the elements, and, like, it made her feel better and powered her up. And then he was like, I'm going out. Don't leave. And he was like, if you get tired, there's something in the bedside table. And then we find out this week what is in the bedside table, and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Although I guess maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really understand why it was there if you're bored. Like,
yeah.
When
we find out what it is, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it wouldn't have cured any boredom or anything like that.
No. A pretty thing for a pretty girl with nothing in her head. Right? Like, I don't. Yeah. Anyway, I was hoping it'd be a vibrator. It was not. So, on to this week. Oh, wait. Did I say that she decided that she was going to leave? So she's just
did,
like...
Did you say that they were engaged?
Oh, no. They're engaged. Like, half married? We don't even really know.
They're essentially married. I think all that's left to do is, like...
Consummate.
And then they're married.
Yeah. So, like, they're half married, which is interesting when this book ends. But, yeah. He tells her not to leave. And she's like, I have free will and so much to do. So I'm going to leave. And I'm like, okay, that's great. So this week starts with a grimoire warning, I guess. Most of them are kind of warnings, but it says candles of darkness should only be used under the direst of circumstances. So interesting. So obviously we're with Amelia, and she thinks of how Victoria possibly met, like, all of the princes that she did. And she wonders how she kept it a secret, because, like, obviously Amelia has been in bed for 2 weeks now after meeting Lust because of how awful the down from that is. It really did, like, while it was happening, I don't know if I said it last week, but it really did seem like a drug.
Yeah.
Like, I know there are certain drugs that, like, when you're off of them, you can feel very depressed. Not, I don't think it lasts for, like, the 2 week kind of thing like this, but... Yeah.
Well, and also
feel very drug-like.
Yeah, but then also too, I feel like she just got into a bath and it made her better.
Yeah. Magic, Kristen. Magic.
I guess. It's just like, if that was the solution, I just don't understand why we didn't do that earlier. Like, why let her wallow for 2 weeks? Like, after a few days when you notice that it's not improving, why not do the bath then?
Listen. Maybe he had things to do and didn't want her interfering.
Maybe. And did anybody die during that 2 weeks? Like,
well, exactly. Did nothing happen in the outside world during those 2 weeks? Like, everything just was on standstill until she was fine again?
Her family's like, it's fine.
That is exactly my point. The whole time I was reading that, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Why isn't her family looking for her?
It's not funny, but... not funny it does that her feel... family didn't look for her, but like, I can't stop giggling about it.
Yeah.
It's like, we lost one twin, why bother with the second one then?
Which is like, I would think that they would be even more protective because of that. I just find it so weird.
Yeah. Especially how the lengths that Nona went to protect them in the first place.
Listen, I can't get into Nona. This week, she, kills me. Yeah, it seemed like 2 days would have been fine and would have made more sense with the story.
Yeah.
'Cause the 2 weeks, I just was like, so nothing else is happening. None of the other princes are doing anything?
Yeah.
So it just felt weird. But that's not the point. She's thinking, I've gotten nowhere. I've said nothing about this week. We're killing it.
We are.
So she's thinking about how Victoria met princes and showed no symptoms of like weirdness or anything. But And like she kept it hidden. Like it wasn't obvious, which is like, impressive, but maybe she just didn't have, maybe she didn't see lust and didn't fall into a depression. Because, like, after Amelia saw Envy, she was fine.
Yeah.
She'd be able to go home and joke around. Anyway, so...
Joke around.
Oh, shit.
Jump up and get down. I know you said joke and not jump, but when you said joke around, that's where my mind went.
So... anyway, Amelia is also much more cautious now than she was before, and she's wary because, like, if she meets up with a prince, it could fuck her over for 2 weeks. Like, that's a long-ass time. She doesn't have time for that shit anymore. And she thinks, like, maybe Victoria had been on edge, and she just didn't notice enough. And, like, she's kind of almost feeling guilty here for not noticing enough about her sister's moods in those few weeks before she died, which, like, I think is probably common. You're always going to think, what more could I do? Mm. So she decides then that she needs to go to the monastery because it just keeps coming up. Like, her sister was there 2 nights in a row. Like, why would she be there? It doesn't really make sense. She never used to go there. So the monastery keeps going up. She found her dead body there, so she's going to do that. She gets there, and Claudia is outside of the monastery, pacing and crying and dirty. And I was like, why is she even at the monastery? But well, she works there, I remembered after. There, yeah.
She embalms the mummies.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a really cool job for an 18-year-old.
Yeah. What do you think her marriage prospects are like?
I actually think they're pretty good.
Yeah?
This event might, like, diminish her value in some way. in terms of the marriage market.
Yes, that's fair.
But no, I mean, she's got a job. She's lives with an aunt with no other offspring. Mm. So, you know, she's the sole inheritor. Like, you know,
yeah.
I think she'll bag a decent one.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, so Claudia's outside and Amelia just asks if she's all right. But she just says that they said not to use the bones and black mirrors. And she's like, she's saying a lot of stuff. And I haven't read the next two books, so I don't know what's important. So I didn't really know how much to include in this. But like, she's all over the place in what she's saying. But she says, bones and black mirrors, piles of bodies and ashes of the fallen. And she's seen the raven's wings against the crescent moon, and the moon is a fang waiting to sink its teeth into all of them, devouring blood and bone until they're all dust. So it sounds like not great. That's what I could take from most of that. But Claudia, like, drops to her knees, and she starts trying to pry up the stones. And, like, she's digging so hard that, like, she's breaking her nails and her fingers are bleeding and stuff, which is just awful. And I don't really know if, like, is there anything down there, or is it just, like, a self-harm thing? Like, I don't really get why she's doing it. But Amelia can tell, like, she's been doing it for a while, and she tries to stop her, but Claudia kind of goes feral on her, and she says a whole bunch of other stuff, but she says Amelia will burn, and the moon will have her vengeance, and the sun will swallow them whole, and nothing will be left. And then Claudia just starts rocking back and forth, and she's, like, speaking in different languages, and Amelia's finally like, shit. She used a black mirror to scry, and, like, is being overwhelmed with information kind of thing. And she asks Claudia if she used human bones. And Claudia says she only did what they said, and she was supposed to help, but now they won't stop screaming. And she says there are worse fates than fire and ash, and then she starts screaming herself. She also tells Amelia that the book needs blood, and to hide her heart, and it's too late, change is here, and he's coming, and he will take her, and she's already gone. And in the end, she'll choose, but he's already chosen. And she says the angel of death claimed and changed her. She's here, but not. Like, some of that I can kind of make sense of based on what happens this week.
Yeah.
I guess the he. But there's definitely more to it than what I can with the next two books, I'd say. But Amelia thinks, like, Claudia is probably trapped between realms and realities, and she's hearing, like, hundreds of messages at once. Which is, like, kind of what they think happened to that witch 18 years ago or something that went crazy as well.
The Santorini lady.
Yeah. Sophia, maybe? I think.
Yes. Yeah, that's later.
Yeah. So it was likely a similar thing that happened to her. But Amelia hopes it isn't because of the spell she asked her to do. And I'm guessing she means the protection spell. Because that's the only spell she asked her to do, isn't it?
Yes. She asked her to do, like, one over her house, like, a dark magic one. So, like,
yeah.
Like, a decently, a powerful one, because she said, is there any spell that can prevent, like, a prince of hell from, like, protect you from a prince of hell? So, like, whatever the spell is, it must have been a severe one that she was asking her to do.
Yeah. But I just feel like that spell probably shouldn't involve scrying with all of my knowledge of spells, you know.
We're so knowledgeable in the art.
Dark arts.
Witchcraft, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I was just like, how would this be because of you? But whatever.
She loves to take on guilt.
Yes. Yes, she does. Claudia is kind of lucid for a bit, and she tells Amelia to run and that he's searching for her. And then she starts screaming again. Obviously, people start hearing her, and the brothers run out of the monastery, and Brother Carmine is there. And I think she mentioned him last week, and I just was like, meh. But he was gone for a while, so it's weird that he's back, for one. But she remembers, from her childhood, he used to, like, get on a soapbox and scream about the devil after what happened to Sophia Santorini. So if he sees Claudia like this, he'll think she's possessed. And she also says, fear made monsters of men. So, like, I just love that line. But, and not even just that it's men, obviously, in this case, men meaning humans in general.
Yeah.
Even though she does have a lot of lines that are heavily feminist, and I love them too. But yeah. This one just is like, so yeah, she doesn't want him to realize that Claudia is
a witch.
Yeah. Between realms at the moment, like, kind of thing. So Antonio comes over to her and asks if Claudia was attacked, and she says she's not sure. Because obviously she can't tell him that she is between realms. Claudia starts saying things again. She says she told her to, and they needed to for Valentina, and he started it, and he shouldn't be able to leave, but rules are for breaking, like bones, and he loves breaking those. So I was a dick and I forgot who Valentina was, but that is her cousin.
Cousin that died. Yes. That died last weeks week. Ago.
Oh, yeah. What the fuck? What, like, ago. Has she been outside of the monastery for 2 weeks?
Oh, dear.
Okay. Anyway. So, yeah. So, obviously, we think she's talking about pride here. He shouldn't be able to leave, but rules are for breaking. Like bones, and he loves breaking those. So I'm assuming that's pride. Like, he's not supposed to be able to leave, but he likes breaking rules. And he likes breaking bones. Fun.
Fun. Yes, fun.
Amelia asks who told her to, and she responds, he's not chained to the gate anymore, and he has the book, the heart, and he needs the body to steal the soul. So anytime they talk about a book, I assume it's, like, the first witch's magic book that we've heard, or grimoire that we heard about. Obviously somebody is stealing hearts, so I didn't know if that was, like, part of what she was saying. And obviously steal a soul, like, we're assuming it's gonna be a witch's soul.
Yeah.
So more brothers come, and Carmine asks if she's possessed by the devil, like, just out of the gates. Like, that's the first thing he's like.
But why Antonio, the heck not?
Yeah. Antonio actually says that she's drunk, which is pretty smart. I'm like, good job.
Yeah.
So Amelia asks him to take her to her Nona and to give her some tea. And he offers Claudia a hand, and Amelia asks if she's ready to go. And she says yes, but Domenico isn't. And we're like, why is she bringing Domenico up? Like, what? Like, he's not here. What is going on? Claudia says he waits, and he wants her to choose, and he will take her heart, too, and her soul, and he wants to kill again, the ultimate prize. So, obviously, they think she's talking about Domenico here again. And they're like, oh, is Domenico the one killing all the witches? Is, like, the jump that they make here?
Which is,
and then we just forget it.
Yeah, like, honestly, not a terrible leap, like, to make. Yeah.
No. So Amelia asks Antonio if Domenico was there today, and he says he's there most days, but he isn't now. And she says she needs to find him, and Antonio offers to go with her, but she's like, she wouldn't be able to ask the kind of questions she needs to with him around. So she's like, nope, I'm fine. I'm sure he's not, like, a killer. Everything's fine. Yeah. Then Antonio takes Claudia, we're assuming, back to her parents' house. And Amelia leaves to find Caroline, because she thinks that Caroline is responsible for Claudia scrying, which kind of makes sense. Was the point that I realized that Valentina was her cousin.
Yeah, I think she told her that she had to, like, Amelia realized that, like, if anybody's going to ask Claudia to scry, it's going to be her dark magic aunt. Aunt.
To find out why her other niece died. I'm assuming it's not her child.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of, we don't really ever follow up on this in this book.
Nope.
But.
Or ever again.
I just. Oh, good. But Amelia does think, like, why didn't Caroline just do it herself? Like, why did she make Claudia do it? And do it alone. Like, that seems not smart. You'd think she'd be around for it.
But I thought it said earlier that Claudia had a gift for seeing.
Yeah, she does.
So maybe this isn't something Caroline could do by herself.
Maybe. But I feel like her gift for seeing probably made it worse for her. Like, that's maybe why she's in a worse place now.
Oh, probably.
Although you should never do magic with human bones, I don't think, as somebody who doesn't do magic at all.
But did it said
it's
that.
A bad idea.
It said that in the grimoire, didn't it?
In one of our little grimoire things,
it said, like, human bones... Like,
well, it said
the bone should be sourced ethically.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. That was like the first week, I think. I don't know exactly, but it did. Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, she's on her way to Caroline's house and she's pissed. On her way, she feels someone angry following her. And she's immediately like, ugh, it's Rath because I left the house and he told me not to. So she turns around and tells him to stop lurking because it's beneath him. Mm-hmm. And he calls her bold for a witch, but it isn't Rath. And you're like, of course it isn't. And then this stranger asks for a taste of her blood and she asks who he is and what he wants. And she is wearing one of Rath's dress again, so she doesn't have her moon blessed chalk. And you're like, damn it, woman, you need to figure this shit out. Yeah.
Like, get the right type of pockets.
Yes. So this stranger steps out, and he's wearing a long duster. And I was like, oh my god, I love it. You'll understand that if you've listened to our Vampire Academy.
Yeah. Catherine has a thing about dusters.
Month. And vampires. It's the combo.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have cared, but...
So you're saying if a random guy walks down the street in a duster, you're not going to immediately go for him?
I'm going to jump on him and check his teeth.
I'm just picturing you, like, running down the road, chasing after some guy in a duster.
God, who would wear a duster around here? Like, so yeah. He's wearing a duster, and he smiles at her, and he has pointed teeth. And she says, Vampiro, which I'm assuming is Italian for vampire. Makes sense.
Yeah. I love the, I love how you said that, too.
Vampiro!
Yeah, it's great.
He tells her, then, that his venom is pleasurable, and he can give her untold ecstasy while he feeds.
Mm.
And... I love it. I would have said yes.
All right.
Drain me dry, sir. So, yeah. She just says, no, thank you. And he's like, okay, maybe next time. And then I'm like, seriously? Is he seriously just, like, done with this? Okay. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And then he kind of, like, facetiously apologizes for frightening her because he can tell that she's scared. And that's he tells nice. Her his name.
What a nice vampire.
He's such a nice vampire.
It's like I'm an old lady going, such a nice boy.
Oh my god. He's probably, like, 500 years old.
Yeah, that's fine.
This is another book with the whole, like, age differences of...
Yes. Kind of, yeah.
Millennia.
Yeah.
Because, like, aren't the princes older than... Would they be older than Earth itself? Like, what is the standard here? I don't know.
Yeah.
But... Anyway.
Yeah.
It's not about love, I guess. Yeah, he tells her his name is Alexei, and Prince Envy wants an audience. But first they're going to go for a stroll together, and it'll give them enough time. And then he says, Mare e Vitigno. Can't say any of that, but it's basically sea and vine in, we're assuming, Italian. And he says, such a lovely name. And then she's like, fuck. Because obviously that's her family restaurant. But she knows that nobody is there. So she says that she's not going to go with him. And I'm like, wait, you can't know that for sure. Like, I know it's night, but like, you don't know where your family is. You don't have track. Like, what?
You also haven't seen them in over 2 weeks.
Right? I'm like, you can't just assume them. These things. Yeah. They're trying to run a restaurant alone. And she says that she dares Envy to try to enter her home. And I'm just like, why are you being so antagonistic? Like, obviously Envy has something over you here. And you don't even know if Claudia did the spell on your house or not. You haven't spoken to her, and you just saw her, and she was...
is a mess.
Had scried. Yeah. So, like, what do you expect? But anyway, Alexi tells her that spells are as easily broken as witch bones when you know who to target. And then you're like, oh shit, are they the reason that Claudia is the way that she is right now? Like, did they fuck around with her head? We don't know. And he basically says, the cast them can break them, and that her family is at sea and vine, and boredom is a terrible affliction in the kingdom of the wicked. So not to keep Envy waiting. And I was like, you just said you were going for a stroll with her. What do you mean, don't keep them waiting?
Like, this is your fault, sir, if they're late.
Yeah. So she doesn't believe him because, like, she doesn't want to. So she casts a truth spell, and it feels wrong because of what he is. But it comes out that it is true. So she runs, and she gets to the restaurant, and she doesn't see anyone but Envy. And he says that she's right on schedule and the show is about to start. And he tells her it's a shame about her Nona. All of that power gone. And she's just like, fuck, is she dead? Like, what do you mean? But he says that she may never speak again, which is a tough fate for a witch. And she then assumes, like she loves to do, that Envy is the one that had the demon attack her Nona. Mm-hmm. Because of this conversation. And I'm like, stop making assumptions.
But again, like, this was weeks ago.
Yeah.
And she, like, she literally left her Nona with, like, a slit throat and was like, I can't stay here. Bye. And then, and she has no idea how Nona's doing.
Yeah.
Like, maybe check in with your family every once in a while.
Nope. Not at all. Not doing it. She asks where her parents are, and he says, locked in the kitchen. And he tells her he left her Nona at home. And she asks, obviously, what he wants. And he says, to sit and dine with him. And you're like, oh, fuck. Like, why are villains always so ridiculous? Like, just tell her what you want.
But also, why are they always so polite?
Like, they're the good guys.
I'm gonna be mean right now. However, come sit, have a meal with me.
But, like... do you think any of it's poisoned? Or, like, do you think... I was kind of wondering if there was, like, a truth spell in some of this or something.
I also, like, wondered that.
She does sit, and she pretends to drink. So I'm like, there could have been, like, a truth spell in it or something. And obviously he says if she doesn't, he's going to torture her family and friends, and then he'll have Alexi drain them all if she refuses. And then Alexi shows up, and she's like, ah...
But he was so nice earlier.
I know. So she tells him that if he leaves the city tonight and doesn't come back, she'll sit down and talk to him. And he's like, you're not in a position to make demands, but he respects the effort.
I mean, valid point.
Right? So she does sit down and they do chat a bit, and she says he's working against pride because all of last week she thought that greed was the one working against pride and she couldn't get over that. But it's Envy. And he says he gets why Wrath is intrigued by her, and he says he likes a challenge and it'll be hard for him to give her up, but he will. And she is standing between Wrath and something he's sought for a long time. And obviously, He's a prince of hell, and we've, like, been told a million times, he's selfish, so he is going to get what he wants and not care about her kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
She just says she already knows that, and she doesn't care. And he says, like, he asks her to tell him what Wrath wants then. And she knows that he wants her to, like, want this information badly so that, like, kind of show her hand kind of thing, like she has every other time she's talked to a prince.
Yep.
So she asks what Envy wants and why he's here. And he says she has something he wants. He says he wants both Cornicellos and that she's going to give them to him. And then a demon with the head of a ram drags her parents out of the kitchen. But they seem, like, super drugged. Like, I don't really know what's going on with them, but they're not lucid. They're just, like, woo, in their own little world.
Which is probably best case scenario, to
oh,
be fair.
For sure. But, like, also, because if they weren't in their own little world, they'd be like, hey, you've been gone for 2.5 weeks or whatever it is. Like, what the fuck? So... You know.
What have you been doing?
Yeah, we haven't seen you. The restaurant's in shambles. Like, you were supposed to go to the monastery to serve the brothers. So, yeah. He tells her she has 24 hours or they will end up in the House of Envy. And, like, she knows he likes to keep people as, like, prizes and trinkets and just show them off as, like, oddities. And... she'll end up worse. So we assume dead, tortured, whatever. So.
Dealer's cool. choice, I guess.
Yeah. She tells him she doesn't have the second Cornicello, but he just tells her to start looking.
But like, and, okay, can I just.
Yeah.
Whose Cornicello is missing right now? Hers?
Hers. She has Vittoria's because she got it from right. the Viperea.
Right. But. She lost hers because she laid it on a table and a demon came, slit her grandma's throat
yes.
and took it, right?
And but she, like, just assumed it was him, but
yeah,
he doesn't.
So now, yeah, so now he doesn't. So, like, shouldn't we be concerned that somebody yes. else is in play here?
Yeah, we should be. Yeah.
And we're not. No. We're just not.
No.
Okay.
She can't leap to that in her head. She's just like, clearly it was him. Although I think she does think it. But I don't know for sure. We'll see what we wrote.
Great. Just great.
Yeah. So yeah, he tells her to start looking. And she, oh, then she says, since he was the one that attacked her Nona, shouldn't he have it? But he says, oh. accusations without evidence are worthless. So we're done with that conversation. That's the end of that. But I love that it came up immediately.
That's what I get for not following the notes.
Well, I literally, if I had read one word more, I would have gotten there on my own, but I lost it. So he tells her he's going to move her family to the house, to their house tonight, and she can meet him there in 24 hours to trade. She goes to give him her sister's half. And I'm like, I'd take the 24 hours to see if I could figure something out. I wouldn't just give him shit without getting something in return, but she's going for it. But he says if he touches it, it will alert those that he doesn't want to until he has the full thing. So, like, I guess Pride would know, like, because they're his horns. I don't know. She tells him that Wrath doesn't want the horns, so why can't he help her look for them? And he tells her to ask him about the final soul he needs to collect to be free, regardless of the curse. And she thinks if it's true, he could have bargained with her when the Viperita got her. So she says that Envy is lying, and he says once Wrath has the final soul, the curse won't matter, and he will have full power and be able to walk the realm freely, and he would be able to choose to rule in his own house or roam wherever he wants. And choice is powerful. And then he asks if she really thought that Wrath was redeemable, which is interesting. But also, like, we did get, I think Rath said last week that there are things worse than death or something, and he says that, like, his house is one of those things that's worse than death. So, like, obviously he's trying to get out of it. But she also has decided that this last soul is her soul.
Yeah. And I don't get the leap.
Me neither. But it's I feel that way about a lot of things. So, yeah. We go back to the Grimoire then, and it basically is another warning about the princes of hell. It says their greatest pleasure is causing discord, and his eyes will darken with flecks of red before he attacks, and it's a sign of bloodlust, and you won't be able to win against them when they're in this state.
That's fun.
Yeah. So she goes back to their palace house place, and Rath asks if she's hurt. And she, like, crowds him towards the wall and, like, cages him in, and I'm like, damn, hot. And she's thinking of running her hands through his hair, and she tells him she wants to trust him and asks him to tell her what he really wants. So she already knows what he's after. So I think this is just like a moment of her being like, maybe he'll tell me. Everything will be fine. So they don't really talk. She just like starts feeling him up under his shirt. And she knows he wants her to, like, she can tell, I guess, from his face, because people can do that.
And maybe his penis.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, that would make more sense. And she wants this to be real, so she kisses him hard and fast, and she just wants to forget. Ooh. And he kisses her back, and then his teeth are against her throat in that same spot that, like, keeps coming up. That he kissed her last week there. Kissed her? I can't remember. He kissed her after the attack there. And then last week, he touched it or something. And she was like, that's where he kissed me. Anyway, I don't remember. But he's fascinated with this one spot on her neck. And she wants him to devour her. And I'm like, damn, we're getting it. We're getting the sex. This is great. Yeah,
I know.
And she thinks to herself, like, no kiss that she's ever had has been like this. It's powerful and savage and sweet. And she, like, tears his shirt off and runs her hands over his stomach. And he picks her up and trails his hand up her leg, up under her skirt. And I'm like, we're getting it. We're getting it.
Yeah, I know.
Then in the back of my head, I'm like, this is a YA book. And she pulls back and she asks if Envy was lying about delivering one more soul for freedom. And she knows it's true by how startled he looks and then how angry he is. And she is just crushed by that information. And I'm like, you should have known better. Why did you start making out with him? What the fuck is going on? Why didn't you just ask him? Yeah. Why did we have this makeout session if you weren't going to have sex? But I'm like, if you're so into this makeout too, how did you manage to stop and be like, wait, is Envy lying?
I feel like she wasn't as into it. Like, I feel like it was sort of all a ruse.
To catch him off guard?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll buy that. So she feels crushed because she's like, he's just going to sacrifice me, blah, 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 blah. And she thinks, like, that's not how you say it?
I just love how nonchalant you were about, he's just going to sacrifice me, blah-de-blah-de-blah.
But, like, I just feel like this was a given all along. Like, he's a prince of hell. Of course he's not as nice as he seems. He doesn't actually care about you. He just cares about your soul. But yeah, she thinks to herself, she'd fallen under his spell and she let him in. And she tells him that, like, she can't talk to him right now. And he says that Envy whispered in her ear and she forgets every action he's done. And he asks what Envy has done to, like, earn that trust, basically. But she asks if it's true that he, like, like, has he been considering using her soul? I'm like, didn't you already jump to the conclusion that that is what's happening? But, you know. But she also tells him, like, Envy has done despicable things, but he had never deceived her or pretended. And Wrath lied to her by admission. And she starts to walk away, but he asks about, like, he did save her life, and he's done so much for her. But she says she's going home since Envy is holding her family. And he tells her Envy will stick a dagger in her back the second he gets what he wants. And she asks if he's going to keep her as prisoner now. And he says no, but he'd be happy to toss her in the dungeon if she wants. I'm like, is this sexual? Are we getting back to sexual?
I'd say yes, please.
Yeah. So she goes back to her room, and Wrath is just, like, following her and trying to talk to her, kind of. But she finds a black dress that she says would be easy to run in. And you're like, smart. She's thinking.
Yep.
And she thinks she needs to find her Cornicello now, obviously, and then bargain with Envy. And she says she's going to bargain with him to close the gates of hell, because, like, that is the issue, is it's opening and demons are getting in.
Yeah.
So she'll bargain with him to promise that he'll close the gates of hell, and then she'll give them to him and get her family back, and he'll disappear, and life will go back to normal. That's how the book ends. Bye, everybody. So I guess the first step is her finding her Cornicello. So she literally just, like, changes her dress in front of Wrath, and he just stands there, and I'm like, I love it. I love that she doesn't care.
Her modesty goes, like, she's, like, blushing at her sister teasing her about, like,
taking Antonio's clothes off. Yeah.
And now she's like, I'll just get naked in front of this guy that I barely know, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's funny. I love it. But she also wraps, like, a pouch around her, kind of like a fanny pack, but smaller, I think. But it has her moon-blessed chalk and her and some dried yarrow in it. And I'm like, smart. Good job. And then she basically demands that Wrath not follow her. And I'm like, what? Why would he listen? Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
But okay. And tells him that she will sever her summoning bond and send him back to hell if he follows her, basically. So I guess that's why. And she swears on her blood that she'll do it. And you're like, okay. But, like, I feel like he could follow her without her knowing. So.
Yeah, I don't really understand, like, I get that maybe she feels betrayed or whatever. I just don't get why this information has made her so angry.
I know. Like, I just feel like she should have known that something like this was going to happen. I don't know. She is 18. So, we're all dumb at 18. Especially around guys.
Were we? Well, I guess, yeah. That's true.
So, she's walking down the street now, and she feels someone following her. So, she, like, slips between two buildings, and she was not expecting it to be Fratello Carmine. And he's just walking by. So, she follows him and hears him talking to another brother. But she can only make out a few words. But from those words, which are just like, Antonio, unholy, missing, signs, she assumes Antonio is being held by Envy. So she goes towards her house because she assumes that Antonio is now missing. And obviously, mm-hmm. he was bringing Claudia to her parents' house. So right. Her parents, Nona and Claudia, are all in the kitchen. And the ram demon's there, the umber demon is there, and Envy is also there. And she wonders if Alexi, the vampire, has Antonio, because he is not in her house. She asks Envy where Antonio is, but he says that, no, that's wrong. She asks Envy where Alexi is, because she's worried that he's draining Antonio. But Envy says that Alexi is in the kingdom watching over his house until he can go back. He also tells her her visit here is unwelcome, but she's, like, super pissed and tells him to take his feet off the, like, island that he's, like, sitting there on.
Yeah.
She's like, be polite in someone else's house. And you're like, I don't think the this is the fight you need to be doing right now.
I thought he had to be invited into a house.
Yeah, that's what Wrath said.
How did he get invited in?
Listen, I guess, like, are her parents so drugged that they just did? I guess? Like, I don't know. Logic. Maybe Claudia did. I don't know. Don't know, man. But yeah, he puts a blade to her throat immediately. And he says, he's like, oh, you obviously talked to Wrath then. That's why you're so angry. And it's true, because her emotions are all over the place. But he, like, pushes in with the blade and it, like, nicks her. And he says not to take her anger out on him, or he'll take it up with her grandmother. And then her Nona just, like, yells out Silentium, and Envy is quiet then. And then her Nona clutches her cornicello and chants a spell and draws an image. And Chimeruta? Don't know how to say that word. Charm appears. And a black portal starts to form behind Envy. And I think we did hear about Chimeruta before. Yes. Maybe in one of the Grimoire things. So, it's coming back.
You have to draw, like, five, you have to do, like, five images related to a certain thing. And, like, it's like five specific things to, like, send someone back to hell or something.
And it's like a branch.
Yeah.
There's five branches on it. So, Envy looks worried and steps back. But her Nana locks his feet in place with an enchantment. And her Nona says, a key to lock, a moon to guide. And Amelia grabs Victoria's cornicello that she's wearing and joins in and says, a dagger to kill, a snake to die. And all of these things, I guess, the key, the moon, the dagger, and the snake appear on this Chimeruta. And are each on, like, the end of a branch. And then they say the last line together. Blessed owl, go forth and fly. And then that appears as, like, the fifth thing on the Chimeruta. And Nona goes over to Envy. And she whispers something in his ear that, like, makes his eyes widen. This doesn't come back this book. Does it come back in another book?
Nope.
Cool. And then she sends him straight into the portal to hell. So that's awesome. The two demons that are in the room just dive in after him, which I just love. I'm like,
like, master!
We're not staying here. You'd think that's, like, he'd probably want them to stay there and, like, keep the family. Like, I don't know.
You would think.
God. But they just dive in. So her parents and Claudia are still really out of it, but her Nona is, like, fine. And her Nona just says to grab the wine because they have a lot to discuss and he'll likely be back soon. Like, I just love it. I love that she's just like, get the wine. We have much to discuss. Like,
we need alcohol.
Yeah. So Amelia asks what kind of magic that was. And Nona says the kind that demands payment. So, like, dark magic? Are you talking about dark magic? Because that's what that sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So they sit with wine, and Nona's attention goes, like, straight to her neck, and she says that Amelia has been marked with a capital M by a prince. And Amelia's like, what the fuck does that mean? But she says it's supposedly a high honor among the houses of the princes, and few are ever given. And Amelia goes to check in a mirror, and Nona uses some magic, and she can see, like, on her neck something that looks like an S or a snake or both. And Nona tells her that she can summon the prince with it and won't need an object from their house, which is interesting because, like, obviously we know the reason she summoned Wrath was because she had his dagger and used it in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now she can just summon him because of this mark on her neck. Nona
convenient.
Nona asks her which prince it is. And she says Wrath. And Nona is just like, are you sure? And she's like, yeah, I'm super sure. Which I just find funny.
Do you know what? That gave me pause, that moment, to be like, oh my God, was he lying? Like, maybe Wrath is actually Pride?
Yeah, I did. I thought that at a few points in this end of the book. Yeah. Like, even up to almost the full end, I was like, are we sure they're not the same person? So, yeah. Nona then says, there's no denying the prophecy now. And you're like, of course there isn't. What the fuck are you talking about? Why didn't you tell her about the prophecy ages ago? And she doesn't even really tell her about the prophecy now, really. Like, she gives her a bit of bullshit, but she doesn't tell her everything. But she says, when she was young, she was entrusted with being one of the keepers of the Horn of Hades. So she says, they've been passed down since, I guess, the first witch. And they were only to be worn when twins were born during the night and a terrible storm. And Amelia asks, like, how she knew it was them. And she says, they are the only twin witches ever born into the line. So, like, it could literally be nobody else because they're the only ones that have ever been born into this family line. So, it just feels crazy that they were like, no one can ever wear these until twins are born into the line. And then they just, twin babies showed up and they were like, put the necklaces on them. Do it. Just like, don't, like, tell them anything, though. Yeah. And she says, the twins signal the end of the devil's curse and would be forced to make great sacrifices to keep the gates of hell intact. If they choose to do nothing, hell would reign on earth. And you're like, you should have told them this. What the fuck? They need to know.
But I feel like this is essentially like, oh, your lives are like forfeit. So, like, I feel like maybe not telling them was sort of a way for them to, like, have a somewhat normal life until they had to, like, sacrifice themselves to the greater good.
Yeah, but I feel like she should have told her once Victoria died, at the very least.
Yes, yeah.
But she tells her now, like, they are meant to bring balance to both realms, and she says, as above, so below. And Amelia thinks, like, she's heard that phrase a few times, once under Lust's influence, and then after, when she was with Wrath, and I think when he was telling her the story that she wanted to ignore that was about her. She asks what it means, but Nona says no one really knows, but, like, there are theories, obviously, among the witches. And some thinks that that line refers to light and dark magic, and some think that a prince will fall in love with a witch, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And others think that one twin will rule in hell, and some think one twin will sacrifice to hell and one twin will be sacrificed to heaven as, like, the balancing thing, which made me think, like, where is Victoria, because she's dead, I guess, but did she go to heaven? Like, is there heaven in this world? Like, just because there's hell doesn't necessarily mean that heaven is a thing, but anyway, lots of stuff going on. Nona tells her that there isn't much time left and tells her to run. And you're like, you just said if she does nothing, hell's gates are going to open up and everyone's going to die, basically. But obviously Nona has fallen in love with her as her granddaughter. So she's just like, we'll find a different way to seal the gates. And she tells her love is the most powerful magic. And she tells her that her heart will conquer darkness. And I don't obviously know what's going to happen in the next books, but I was like, I feel like this is an important line. So Amelia ends up outside and, like, because she did run because her grandmother was like, you need to run. So she leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And didn't she essentially say, like, we'll be fine. Just get out of here. Leave us. We're going to go into hiding too.
Yes. Yeah. She tells her to go into hiding and says that they're going to go into hiding. But she goes outside and then she thinks, like, someone should have told them about the prophecy before now, if it means, like, the world is ending. And you're like, yes, we agree.
Probably, yeah.
But she hears her parents waking up, and she wants to go back inside and see them because, like, she hasn't talked to them in, like, 3 weeks. But she knows that they're safer without her, so she just is like, cool, I'm gonna leave then. She then wonders, like, if her sister knew about the prophecy and if she was trying to save Amelia by making the deal with Pride. Like, if she heard about the prophecy and was like, oh, it means one of us needs to rule in hell, and decided she would. But she thinks, like, her love for Victoria made her stronger. Kind of going back to her, Nona said, like, love is the most powerful magic. Then she thinks of the fennel. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I think when her Nona trapped Envy's feet, she used fennel, dried fennel or something. So she thinks of the fennel, and then she thinks of the door with the paw print and the fennel, and she remembers childhood stories, and she, like, actually remembers where she saw the paw print in the fennel before, because, like, when she saw it on the door, she was like, oh, was that in Victoria's diary? And then she went back to check, but the diary was gone, and then she had more things to deal with. But she remembers now, from childhood stories, that it actually symbolizes an ancient order of shapeshifters who battle evil. And she's like, interesting. So she decides she should go check the paw print door room to see if, like, there's any, like, see if she can find these shapeshifters, if they still exist, and see if they'll help. So she ends up in this room again. It's just full of fishing gear. And she knows she needs to find something there. And I'm like, why doesn't she just hold her cornicello all the time? Like she would have just, like, saved so much time if she just held her cornicello forever and found everything she was supposed to before now. But anyway, she holds Victoria's cornicello and she hears a humming. So she follows it to a wall with fishing gear on it. And she looks it over, and then one hook hums the closer she gets to it. So she tugs on that one, and a secret door appears. And
oh my God.
Surprise, surprise. She swears she can hear distant whispers of many voices. And she thinks about Victoria's diary and how Victoria followed the hum of voices to a cave high above the sea. And she found it. And managed to understand one line before it descended into chaos. And she wonders what it was that Victoria found and that she hid again. And she wonders if it's the same thing that is calling her now. And if Victoria's amulet is giving her Victoria's magic. So, like, I just assumed that it she found was the first book, the grimoire, the witch's first book thing. And I'm still assuming that, but she prays to the goddess. She holds her cornicello and she steps through the door. And I do want to say, I appreciate that she's not like, she's not fearless. She's like, fuck, I don't really want to go down here. I need to, like, build up my courage to do this. I like that as her character. Like, she's not,
yeah.
I feel like if this was Victoria's story, she'd be like, running down there, not a care in the world. But I do appreciate that, yeah. Like, she does have some, like, fear about this all. But yeah, so she goes in.
Trepidation.
Yes, that's a good word.
So, she goes through the door. She's at the top of some stairs. She makes her way down, and she actually uses the cornicello to do, like, some magic she hasn't done before. She's like, she remembers that at one point the cornicello did, like, light up for her. So she was like, maybe I can make it do that.
Mm-hmm.
So she makes it do that. And so, like, it, like, shines a light to help her see. And this is sort of like a moment of, like, well, maybe for us anyway, mm-hmm. It's like, maybe she's more powerful than any of us realize.
Other than, like, Wrath did say at one point, I think last week, that she had, like, untapped power or something. So I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's my wonder.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so, and it sort of, like, when I was reading it, I got this, like, not like other girls sort of trope from it. You know what I mean? Like, she's not like the other witches.
Yeah. Which I guess, like, she has a prophecy about her. I guess she isn't like other witches. But still.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah.
I get what you're saying, though.
So she follows, like, these whispers that she hears using her amulet and follows, like, this tug in her gut that has already led her to a couple of dead bodies. So, like, who knows? Maybe we'll get another.
Yeah.
So the amulet goes from glowing purple to, like, this pulsing white light. And then she sees this weird cross on the wall and, like, she feels like she's under a church. And I'm like, how many churches are in this town? Because underneath the cathedral church thing, there's the viper big snake.
Yeah.
So, like, is this a different place now? Like, there's just churches everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if it's in Italy.
It's true.
Not entirely.
Well, yeah, I guess maybe it could also just be, like, sacred ground or whatever. Hallowed ground. Yes, hallowed. Yeah. How are you supposed to say that?
Right. So she sees a hint of silver buried in some dirt, and she digs there, and she finds her amulet. And I'm just like, why is it buried in the dirt in a dingy basement?
Who took it?
How did it get there?
Yeah.
Who took it? And I will be completely honest with you. Forget those questions, because we'll never know the answers.
Good.
After reading the series now, I'm done. The three books. That's never brought up again.
Great.
It's just, sure, it's in the basement. It's fine.
Like, it's clearly a trap. But, like, who made the trap?
Yes. Who? Yeah. Anyway, so she takes off her sister's amulet and puts hers on. She still doesn't want to wear them both at the same time because she's worried about combining them.
Mm-hmm.
And she hears somebody, like, close by. But obviously, like, this is what I don't understand. So, like, there's one entrance and one exit. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, she had to go through a secret room to get here.
Yes.
So, I don't understand how she hears somebody, but yet can still go back up the stairs, like, and, like, or, like, go through the hallway, like, toward the stairs.
Yeah.
And not encounter someone.
I guess we don't 100% know for sure that there is only one way in, one way out.
I guess.
But I get what you're saying.
Anyway, she leaves the room, but she realizes that whoever is coming her way and she can't escape. So instead, what she does is she tucks herself into, like, a dark corner and puts her blessed chalk around it, like a protection circle.
Mm-hmm.
So the creature passes by her little alcove and she's like, "Ooh, yeah,
I did it.
Forget, I'm not here. I did it." But then stops. And turns to look at her. And she immediately recognizes the shadow of the person.
Uh-uh.
And makes out their features. And she starts cursing. Because it's Wrath!
We're happy.
He didn't listen. He followed her. So he covers her mouth so she can't talk. Mm. Because she's like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" She doesn't say that. But she's like,
it's pretty close.
And then he just crosses her protection circle and she's like, "Well, I guess that's a fucking useless thing."
Yep.
And I'm like, is it because it's actually useless or is it because of their connection or like what's, anyway.
So many questions.
So he tells her that now that she has both pieces of the horn, there are 36 Umbra demons closing in that have been essentially tracking her since she left her house, which is great.
Good.
And then he tells her if the demons attack, she has to run and do not look back, which is, like, cute. And she's an idiot in this scene.
Yeah.
100% she's an idiot. So she asks, like, how are all these demons here? And he's like, two ways. Either someone summoned them all. or the gates are weaker than they thought they would.
Yeah.
They were. And Rat then says, like, hey, listen, I can transvenio us back to the palace, like, essentially teleport them back to the palace.
Yeah.
But she has to agree and give consent.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, she's trying to ask some questions about it. And I'm like, this is not the time.
I know, but it is wild that you consent once and then forever. Now he can just take you wherever he wants forever. That's not how consent works. You can take it away at any time.
Yes, yes. I do. I agree with you, but her life is in danger. Yes, yeah. There are demons coming for you. 3 dozen. That's 36. That's too many to fight off.
Yeah, I agree. Right? She doesn't really have a choice.
No. So she's like, she says she wants him to take them to safety, but MB has like created doubt in her mind about his real like motivations. Mm-hmm. And you're right. She's like, I need to ask you some questions. Like, is this a time by time permission thing? And he says, no. Once you give it once, it's eternal.
Which is wild.
He also then, I feel like this is a mistake. He then tells her it feels like being incinerated for a split second. And she's like, well, in that case, no.
I'd rather die at demon hands. You're like, really? That's
right. Yeah, and that is the choice she makes, and it is dumb.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's an idiot, but fine. So all of a sudden, he tells her to run, and then he kicks something invisible and starts striking with his dagger. So the Umbra demons are here.
I like that he can see them.
Yeah.
Just as a
Well, aside. Thank God somebody can.
Well, yeah.
So as he, like, kills them, their invisibility goes away. It makes them visible, so she can see all these, like, dead bodies, and apparently they're really scary.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, he tells her to run again before Envy slinks out and tells the demons to seize Wrath, which they do. So, like, obviously he couldn't fight off 36 demons.
Yeah. Are we gonna assume that Envy was the one that had a demon take her cornicello and put it here so that he could have this fight?
But why?
I know.
Why bother?
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is, like, I just don't get why, like, it sounded like they followed her here. So it sounded like they didn't know where the other cornicello was either. But I just don't understand who put it there. Don't get it.
Me neither. So he starts to, like, let out his power because, like, he hasn't actually used any of it yet.
Yeah.
And he starts to, like, let it out. And he sort of, like, everything starts to shake. But MB is like, oh, you do that, you're going to crush her. And MB then, like, assures Amelia, he's like, trust me, he doesn't care for you. Because he stops using the power then when Envy is like, be careful, you'll crush her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh shit. And she's like, don't worry, this doesn't mean he cares about you.
Yeah.
Like, he still wants your soul.
Why can't he get her soul? Like, I don't know. Wouldn't he just be able to, like, take, like, if he crushed her, could he just, like, bring her back to life again and take her soul then? Like, I don't know. There's some logic missing for me.
Yeah. But then Envy also tells Wrath that, like, he is also somebody to be feared, and Wrath needs to remember what it's like to have what he wants taken away. So he then takes a dagger and stabs Wrath, like, on one, like, above a hip.
Hmm.
And slides it across all the way to the other hip and essentially, like, disembowels him. There's, like, organs, like, slipping out.
Yeah.
And he obviously becomes covered in blood, and Amelia then throws up because ew.
Yeah.
And she essentially, like, yells for Envy to stop. And Wrath, like, slides down to the ground, and she sees that Wrath is, like, truly dying. Like, he's not healing like he normally would.
Yeah.
And she kneels beside him and tells him, like, it'll be okay. He just has to heal. And, like, she's too rattled to do any of her healing spells. So it's sort of the same way with her Nona. Like, she was just too upset to do anything about it. And now it's the same thing. It's like her panic is getting the better of her.
Yeah.
But she notices, like, he's very still and his pupils are fixed. Like, they're not moving. Mm. And she obviously is like, I can just stay next to you and wait for you to heal. But, like, there are still a ton of demons around and Envy is still there. So, like, you can't really, like, they're not just going to wait for him to heal himself.
No. Like, they're there for her.
Yeah. So, and she was thinking back to when, like, Wrath stabbed Lust, because she was like, oh my god, did you kill your brother?
Yeah.
He was like, no, no. Like, he'll be fine.
Just sent him back to hell.
But he had, yeah, but he was like, he didn't look the way Wrath looked.
Yeah.
And she couldn't breathe because she couldn't imagine what it would be like without him.
The fuck is going on?
I don't, anyway, so, like, all of a sudden he disappears.
Yeah.
And Envy grabs her and tells her to give him the Horn of Hades and he will think about killing her quickly. So, she's gonna be next.
Yeah. And she won't just go to hell. Well, we don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the world's like. Maybe she will just go to hell.
So Amelia gets real mad. So Wrath is hurt because he fought for her. So she grabs Victoria's amulet from her pocket and she puts the two of them together and power surges through her and thunder cracks and she tells Envy to get out before she makes him get out. And that does it.
Works the charm.
He just takes, he's like, okay, fine, but you'll regret this. So, I mean, not that bad, actually.
Good job, I guess.
So, yeah, right? Threats work. Mm-hmm. So she wonders what will happen now and thinks of what she should do, but she doesn't know. So she goes back to the palace because it's where she feels safe. And she feels goosebumps on her neck and realizes that Wrath gave her a way to summon him using the mark. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I'm going to summon him and get him back here. Because she's just worried that he's not alive. Mm-hmm. So she goes to grab all the supplies, but realizes that Wrath, one of the metals required for Wrath is gold. Mm-hmm. And she's poor and doesn't have any. So, like, his dagger sort of was double. It worked double. It was an item that he possessed and it was gold. Yeah. So that's how she managed to summon him. Now she doesn't have his dagger and she doesn't have any gold. So she's, like, feels all this despair because she's lost her family. She assumes they've already gone into hiding. And she saw Wrath get hurt. And even though she doesn't or she shouldn't like him, him being hurt still affects her. Mm-hmm. So she goes to her room and she looks over and sees a bottle of Prosecco with two glasses and chocolate-covered orange slices. And she doesn't remember that being there before. So, like, was Wrath setting up, like, a romantic scenario like when she came across him and, like, jumped him?
Or is she saying, like, when that happened, she, like, because she went back to her room and changed. Was it not there then? Did he put it there as, like, a apology?
Maybe.
Like, his plan was once she came home, they would have a chat. And a drink.
Maybe. Anyway, so, like, it just seemed like a romantic sort of, like,
setup.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then she remembers that Wrath told her if she was bored to look in a drawer.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay. So she goes and looks in there. And it's a gold ring. How is this going to cure her of boredom? I'll play dress up.
It's a pretty little thing. Pretty little girl. I don't know. I honestly, I was like, what?
The description of the ring as well sort of confused me.
I don't remember it.
Hang on. Wait now. Okay. So, the ring, when she looks at it, the description in the book is a small gold ring hammered into olive branches sat on a bed of crushed velvet. So, I don't understand. Is it a ring with olive branches set, like, in the ring? Is it a ring that has, like, a stamp of, like, an olive branch symbol in it? Or is the ring, like, stuck on a bed of olive branches?
Yeah. So, I assumed the third one, but then when she takes the ring out, she says something about the olive branches still on it. So, it's clear, like, the olive branches are part of the ring design, but I cannot picture it, and I just gave up. But, the crushed velvet, is that, like, what it's lying on? Or is there, like, some, like,
yes,
is the crushed velvet...
it's resting on a bed of crushed velvet. So, like, it must be in a box of some sort.
Yeah. It did confuse me. I forgot about it completely. I also listened to the audiobook of that part and was like, well, not rewinding that.
Yeah. Anyway, so, like, she puts it on and obviously it fits perfectly.
Because he magically measured her fingers. Or he did it while she was sleeping. That's why he was holding her hand. He was measuring her finger for a ring.
No, but do you know what, though? Like, romance books always do this. It's like, oh, of course it fits perfectly because he knows me so well and he knows my body so well. Yeah. He knows the exact shape of my fingers because we're so well matched. It's like, by being able to estimate your ring size, it means that, like, you're good together. Yeah. Like, anyway.
Like, my sister's husband actually did for the engagement ring. He guessed correctly, but I'm like, most people, like, I wouldn't even be able to guess what size my finger was.
Me neither. So, and I'm also like, she puts it on, like, we've already established that they are essentially almost married.
Yeah.
Is this your wedding ring? Like, is this your wedding band right now? What? And you're just putting it on, accepting it? Like, yeah.
What thing? She doesn't put it on her, like...
She does. No, it doesn't say what finger she puts it on.
Yeah. I thought she put it on like, and it fits. Pointer finger or something.
I didn't think it said. Oh, yeah, her forefinger.
What finger is that?
I'm assuming it is
the pointer finger. That's what I thought, yeah.
I think so.
But I was also like, I don't know what a forefinger is.
But also, God only knows where Italian people used to put their wedding rings.
And
right?
Witches, like, and demons. Like, it could all be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? But she knows that, like, him using the olive branches is, like, a gesture of peace.
Okay, like, but he gave her the olive branches after lust. Like, this isn't an apology since she found out about... Because that's supposedly been there since he... That night.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Anyway, so I guess she realizes then that he gave her all the necessary pieces needed to summon him, right? He gave her the gold, assuming she wouldn't have any, and he gave her the mark so that she would always have a piece of him. So she does the ritual and, like, lights the circle and says the spell a whole bunch, but he doesn't come.
So he's dead.
And she, well, that's sort of the assumption.
That's what I assumed.
Yeah. And she feels like overwhelmed with everything that's going on. So, like, her family is gone. Antonio's been kidnapped and she has no idea where he is. Claudia's also gone. However, she's not worried about that part. She's worried about the fact that her mind is trapped.
Yeah.
So she just goes to bed.
Fair.
So next morning she prepares for the day. She has, like, this, like, moment of revelation, sort of like she's done feeling sad and she's done feeling like a victim. So she is, like, raring to go. Mm. So she heads to the market and goes to the Nucci cart and orders a penne.
Sure.
It's like arancini, but flat, I think.
Sounds yummy.
So, yeah, it does. It sounds delicious. So she asks how Domenico Jr. is doing, because this is Domenico Sr. Mm-hmm. And he tells her he actually left town this morning. So she pivots and asks him about the gambling hall, because she wants to find it. But he tells her the guy who runs it left.
Who was greed. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she notices, like, a tattoo on his arm. It's a paw print with a fennel stalk.
What?
I know. And the symbol is also painted on his food cart. So that sort of makes her click in and realize that Signore Nucci is a shapeshifter.
Interesting.
Yes. And she realizes that in her sister's diary, when she talks about Domenico, she doesn't say Domenico Jr. So she then is like, she's in her head, she's like, I just made that assumption. Mm-hmm. But that was probably wrong. She was like, that was wrong. She was discussing Domenico Sr. Mm-hmm. And she accuses him, like, right in front of everybody. Like, he's got a busy cart.
Yeah.
And she's just like, you hurt Vittoria. And he's like, one moment, please. And he's like, let's go somewhere and talk. So he, like, just shuts down and, like, drags her around the corner to an alley to talk in private.
Yeah.
And he then drops a nugget of information that Vittoria actually worked at the gambling hall, passing out drinks. And she was apparently working on a plan with greed.
Interesting.
They were in on something together. And he asks if she knows about the Benandanti. They are shapeshifters, and their spirits change into animal forms and astral travel about 4 times a year. And they fight in the night battles, quote unquote. We don't know anything else about what these night battles are, and nor do we hear it ever again.
Interesting. I guess there is another series of books in this world. We may get some stuff, but it is still like, maybe. What is happening?
Yeah. So she's like, yeah, I know what a Benandanti is. And he's like, okay, well, I'm not a Benandanti. But they were like, they did steal my people's symbol, so people get them confused. He is a actual shapeshifter, or actually, he's a werewolf.
Yeah.
And they call themselves the Ember Wolves, which is, I will say, a pretty good name. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that should be a book on its own, The Ember Wolves.
Yeah. Maybe it will be at some point.
And he then reveals that he made a bargain with greed to help forgive his debts. And that all the wolves had to do was fight on the devil's side when the time comes. And apparently he said, like, that wasn't even greed's idea, it was Vittoria's. But Domenico Sr. thought that that was sort of a fool's deal, because the wolves haven't actually been able to shift for 20 years. Coincidence in timing?
What an idiot.
So, yeah. So he's like, I made that deal, but like, when the time comes, we won't be able to fight because we won't be able to turn into wolves.
Yep.
So, they have no idea why they lost the power to shift, but one usually shifts for the first time when they turn 20. So again, the timing is impeccable.
Yeah.
So I guess Domenico Jr. is about 20 and he shifted, and he didn't even know he was a werewolf because his father didn't think it was worth mentioning.
What? Why are these parents so useless?
So bad. It's like, hey, you can't shift, but you're a werewolf. Like, just like, yeah. Our family is werewolves. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's fine. Everything's fine. So, Domenico Jr. shifted, didn't know he was a werewolf, and I guess he told his father, and his father's like, oh shit, by the way, I made a deal with Greed, so you're gonna have to fight for him. Like, fight for the devil. And that pissed Domenico Jr. off, because wolves only ever fight for their pack. If he didn't know he was a wolf, yeah. Why is, like, that should not matter.
He's got morals.
Sure. And apparently he's been at the monastery every day praying for them. Yeah. And yeah. And he tells Amelia that Vittoria set all of this up. And apparently it was a part of her bigger plan. But she didn't tell him what the bigger plan was.
Interesting.
And she then said, I guess Amelia heard all this and she's like, Domenico isn't really gone out of town, is he? And he was like, no, he's at the monastery.
Why did you even say he's gone out of town? Why? Okay.
So she was like, peace out. And she's all stressed because she put it together that maybe Domenico confided to a brother at the monastery. And I'm just like, I feel like he would probably think better than to tell a brother that he was a werewolf.
Yeah.
But that's her assumption, that he confided in a brother that he's a werewolf.
But, like, they wouldn't believe him anyway.
But I guess they do. And that he confided to the wrong brother, and now that brother has made a leap to witches and is killing witches instead of werewolves? Like...
Yeah. Okay.
So, great. So she automatically suspects Brother Carmine, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah, he's the perfect angry man.
Yeah. So she goes to the monastery, the brothers are out in the courtyard, and Brother Carmine, of course, is giving a speech about evil. And then she feels like this call of magic from inside the monastery, and it's the same as the night she found Vittoria, just way more powerful. And she sneaks inside, and she can feel someone watching her and demands that they come out, but they obviously don't. So she's just like, fine, follow me. Because she then ignores it, and she follows the whispers of voices that are obviously supernatural, until she finds... a room, and I can't remember if it must be a different room than the room where she found Vittoria's body. But she looks inside, and initially she sees nothing in there, but once she gets fully inside the room, the glamour drops and the whispers turn to a chatter, and the voices say, it's here. She's arrived. Open the binding. Set her free.
Interesting.
So the room. Yes, yes. The room turns out to be covered in Latin, just everywhere on the walls. And there is a book. And she understands that this is the secret her sister died to keep. And obviously it was the Prima's grimoire.
Obviously.
Yeah. So she opens it to where it was bookmarked. It is a summoning spell for the devil.
What? You can't summon the devil.
Can't you?
He's stuck there.
Mm-hmm. So she also understands that... So she understands that somebody obviously wants to summon the devil. And she also understands that Vittoria stashed the book here and ripped the pages that Amelia needed to summon wrath out of the book, because it radiates so much power that Amelia would have felt it if it was in their room. And Nona would have felt it if it was in their house. And all of a sudden, someone behind her says, at last!
It's the villain!
Very, yeah, very, like, core villainy of that person.
Yeah.
And she turns around and sees Antonio.
What
a plot twist. And at first she's like, oh, it's Antonio. I can spin this, like, in my favor because he's my friend. But she sees that he doesn't look concerned. Because, you know, in her head, he's been kidnapped.
Yeah.
She sees hatred.
Interesting.
Yes. And he then admits that he killed Vittoria. And, yeah. He delivered Claudia to Envy, and he considers himself a man of God, and he's ridding the world of evil, and that all witches are born evil. He's done a great job acting the past, like, the whole book, really.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about it?
I don't know. I'm like, I just have so many thoughts about the whole thing. I kind of feel like we need to get a bit more of his villain monologue before I can really get into it.
Okay, sure. So she grabs the Horn of Hades and actually whispers like a really foul spell that cuts Antonio's robes to shreds. So like, I guess the intention is if she continues, it'll start cutting his skin.
Yeah.
And I guess that scares him, because then he starts begging for mercy. But she is in full-on rage mode, mm-hmm. and then she uses the same spell and slashes his skin.
Fair.
And she curses him then and says when the time comes, he will beg for death, and he will never experience happiness again, and every time he laughs, she will be there to remind him of his sins, the sins he committed, and that he is cursed to remember all of those sins, and his heart should break every time he forgets. And like, her little speech, this curse, and her all of her wrath makes him pee his pants.
Yep. Which, so like,
she looks real mad.
I get why she's so pissed. 100%. She's like, oh, this is the killer, this was my whole goal, I'm going to make him suffer. Here for it.
Yeah. But then on top of that, too, like, he was her friend, right? Like,
yeah.
And he betrayed her. So, like, I feel like there's an extra layer to her pain.
Well, yeah, and he, like, he was her sister's friend, too. Like, yeah. She thought she was in love with him, too, up until Wrath showed up, and she was like, oh, men can be that hot?
Yeah. Like, that's a man.
Yeah.
Right there. So him, like, peeing his pants sort of makes her remember when Wrath tortured Francesco, like, that messenger guy. Mm-hmm. And she understands that if Wrath can show mercy, she can also show mercy. So she amends her curse and tells him he needs to tell her the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that sort of what we assumed in the first week. The whole, like, thinking that maybe there was something about how his mom died.
Yeah.
Dealing with. So we thought it was about her. And it's sort of not. So apparently a week before his mom died, he took her to a woman who used folk magic to heal. But turns out she's a witch. But his mom died a week later anyway.
So now he hates all witches.
Yeah, obviously. His mom was sick enough for them to go to a witch to heal her. She obviously wasn't healed, so it's obviously the witch's fault. Like, I feel like this is a really convoluted story.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they couldn't really have a witch vengefully kill his mother and that be the reason. So, like, eh. They needed to do it this way, but I'm like, that's not a good enough reason to hate a species of people.
Nope, it's not. So he prays for retribution then after his mom died. He prayed for retribution and his prayers were answered. An angel came to him, and at this point we're sort of assuming it's Envy.
Yeah. Like,
because he's sort of being geared up to be, like, the mastermind of all this.
Yeah. And, like, he gave Claudia to Envy. If he knew he was Envy, I don't think, like, even though he doesn't like her and would probably kill her, I don't think he would have knowingly given her or Victoria and Amelia, both of their parents, let them stay with a demon if he knew it was a demon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it seems like Envy is the one.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're an idiot. He's not a fucking angel. He's a prince of hell. But then,
I mean, he is an angel.
Yeah, but, like,
princes of hell are fallen angels.
Yes, but he's not, like, an angel like he thinks he is. He thinks he's, like,
no,
an active angel. He's a fallen angel.
He's in the active service.
But, yeah, it's just, like, you're so dumb. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're doing. I don't understand your plan. I don't get it.
Anyway, this angel came to him and told him about the devil's curse, that he had to marry a witch in order to break the curse, and saying, like, the curse cannot be broken at all costs. And he said the angel would give him the names, he just had to kill them. And I'm like, how is he tearing out their hearts? That's supernatural shit.
Yeah.
There's also no way Antonio, as a human, can reach into someone's chest and tear out their heart.
Envy taking their hearts? And why? Is it just a symbol of, like, the first witch died, not the first witch, but the first witch's daughter who was married to Pride lost her heart, and now this is, like, a warning? Like, I...
So he then even says to Amelia, like, he didn't want to kill Victoria, and he even begged the angel to let her be spared. But that night, when Amelia was cooking dinner and, like, Victoria came in and, like, spooked them and joked about summoning the devil, Antonio was like, oh, she has to die.
Sick.
Great. He also accuses Amelia. She's like, we haven't done anything to you. Like, how could you do this to us? And he's like, you cast a love spell on me, and tells her that she deserves to be in hell.
Which is so, I do love, like, I love this. I love that he's, like, he's projecting his feelings, and he's like, they can't be real. It has to be a spell, because I couldn't be in love with a witch. Like, I hate that he's doing it, but I love the storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, she wants to refute it, but, like, she remembers that, like, because he's like, you're saying you've never used magic on me. And and then she's like, no, I haven't. He's like, you're a liar. You put a love spell on me. She's like, she's thinking to herself, like, it wasn't a love spell. It was a truth spell. But, like, it's still the same. Like,
it was against his will.
Yeah, she still did magic on him without his consent. So, like, she doesn't even refute, really, that she cast a love spell on him, because... Yeah. She's like, there's no point. I still did magic on him.
Yeah.
So, his plan right now, the reason he, like, came upon Amelia, is he plans to summon the devil and have him watch as he destroys the horn.
This is a plan, I guess.
It's something.
Yeah.
It's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But it's fine,
I guess.
And she's, like, trying to get the truth out, and she's like, who is the angel of death? And he's like, I don't know, I never saw their face. But she just assumes it's Envy.
Of course. That's her go-to, is just assume.
Yeah. And then he says his plan is for her to summon the devil, and then he's going to kill him.
What? How's he going to kill him?
Yep. Yeah. I don't know.
Thought he was just going to break the horns.
Apparently he's not. Apparently now, 2 seconds later, he wants to kill him.
Fair. You'd think that, like, as a man of God...
He wouldn't want to kill anybody?
No. Well, yes, obviously. He shouldn't be killing witches or anybody because he's a man of God. But you'd think as a man of God, he wouldn't want to kill the devil, because the whole point of religion... Not the whole point of religion, but, like... It's, like, the balance of good and evil, and, like, there's heaven above and hell below and they're both ruled kind of thing. You'd think that he'd want to keep that, but now he's going to kill the devil. It just seems weird.
Yeah. And anyway, so she agrees to summon the devil. She disagrees. She's like, why wait? Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I'm actually just looking at the page now to figure out like what was going through her head. She said, so I guess she is assuming that Envy is behind everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she's thinking about her sister and how her sister planned on summoning the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And knows that she must have wanted to bargain with him. And she's assuming that her sister, like, whatever is at play here, they need to help break the curse. And that's why her sister wanted to, like, wanted to summon the devil.
Yeah.
To actually help break the curse.
And, like, and she did agree to Wrath that she would, to what Amelia knows. Victoria did agree to marry the devil. She told Wrath she would. And that's why she was killed.
Yeah. But she's also thinking that, okay, Victoria engineered this, like, this team up between Greed and the werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whatever is going on, she's assuming that Victoria was trying to do something positive to help. And that whatever is going on, the curse needs to be broken.
Yeah.
So she's like, well, now I need to find out. She's like, Antonio might be being an asshole, but he's not the one orchestrating everything. So I have to figure out who's orchestrating everything.
Mm-hmm.
So she thinks that by summoning the devil, she can use it to her advantage. So they summon the devil. And smoke, like, fills the room. But there's, she, like, sort of expects, like, a man to show up.
Yeah.
The same way Wrath did. But instead, the smoke possesses Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some reason, Pride assumes that, like, she's agreeing to be his bride now.
Yeah.
Automatically. He's like, oh, you've summoned me, so you obviously want to get married.
Mm. Yes.
And she doesn't say no, though.
Yeah. But she never has in this entire book said no to anything.
No.
She's very wishy-washy about everything that happens.
She is, yes. So, like, he is essentially like, you're gonna be my bride. And she's like, meh, we'll see. And he offers, he's like, do you want me to kill Antonio for you as a gift for my house? But she says no, that when he dies, she wants it to be by her hand. And she also tells him, like, she has some things to get done. And to meet her in the cave where she first summoned Wrath. And she'll be there. She'll meet him in an hour. And she'll have her final answer then. Mm-hmm. So she puts Antonio's body to sleep. And she wants to look at the Prima's grimoire first. But it's gone.
Interesting.
Yep.
So, sorry. But do you think that Pride had to possess him because he can't, his own body can't come out of hell? Is that what we're assuming?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
That is what I'm assuming.
Yeah, makes sense. He's locked in there.
So, can I, so when, in the next book, and this isn't revealing a lot now, like, it's revealing a very tiny little tidbit, we learn that the curse actually takes one thing from all the princes.
Oh, okay.
So everybody has lost something.
Yeah. So it's you'd think it would be beneficial to all of them to have the curse broken.
You would think, but I guess they don't want Pride. Like, Pride's thing is he can't get out. Right? So I guess they don't want that. So he's like, okay, cool, and he leaves. So she plans to make a bargain with Pride that will be his entire realm's undoing. So she is like, she's vowing to her sister that she's not going to rest until everybody responsible for her death meets their end. So I guess she's sort of realizing that it's more complicated, like her sister's death was a part of something more complicated than she first mm-hmm. thought. Like, she sort of thought she'll find the person responsible and then that'll be it. But she's realizing that, like, Antonio was being manipulated.
Yeah.
So, like, she wants to figure out all the players involved. Mm-hmm. So, she gets to the cave, and it isn't Pride there to meet her, but Rat.
What the fuck?
Yep. Yep. He's alive!
And you're like, so, was he just so fucked he couldn't get to her earlier when she summoned him? Because, like, the way her grandmother talked about it, it sounded like he wouldn't have a choice but to come when she, like, that's why it's so special that she has the mark. Because it kind of seems like it's like you don't have a choice.
Yeah, you'd think.
So, yeah. Was he just still too fucked up? Which is fair. He did get gutted. But, like, yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, obviously, like, he's there and she's really upset because she sort of thought that he tricked her, like, he made her think that she actually cared, that he actually cared about mm-hmm. her, but, like, obviously he didn't because he didn't come when she summoned him, if he's fine right now.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know if that's fair, like, you know what I mean?
I agree. I just, like, I don't... We don't know why he didn't come, like we just said.
Yeah.
I assume it was because he couldn't. I don't think it was because... He didn't want to. I thought it was because he was literally recovering from being. Got it. It's yeah. not funny, but it is.
Yeah. But then he's also being really, like, cold and jerkish to her. Like, he's not acting the way he normally has been acting. So she assumes that, like, oh, he's back to being his real self, and, like, this is why, like, he put on this air of caring about me, but he obviously doesn't, because now he's acting, like, cold and indifferent.
Yeah.
So she tells him she will accept the deal on two conditions. That no other witch will be hunted or killed, and the princes will stay out of the human world, and that's one condition.
Mm-hmm.
And the second condition is that Antonio is her prisoner to do with what she sees fit.
So
no one else is to touch him. So she took him with her.
He's coming to hell.
Yep. And I don't know how she got him from the monastery to now, because he's still, like, asleep.
Magic.
She's got him. She must have, like, floated him along or something like that. But he's, like, he's there.
Yeah.
So... He agrees. I don't know how he is, and, like, I guess he's allowed to make deals for Pride now, but it's fine.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess that was his whole job all along, was to make the deals.
I guess. That's true. Yeah, that's true. So he agrees to the deal, and he magics a scroll, which she signs. And she also has to hand over the horns, which she does. And she thinks about how, like, she's taking them off because she doesn't have to worry about the Malvagi finding her anymore. They found her.
Yeah.
But, yeah, right? Because that's the whole reason why you keep it on, so that the Malvagi don't find you.
Yeah.
But they found her anyway. And she would make them rue the day they came for her family. So she is, like, on a quest for vengeance. And she says then she's going to discover who was behind the murders and what they were after, and she's going to destroy them all. And she turns around to the feeling of power and sees that Wrath, like, got rid of sleeping Antonio. He must have, like,
magic
moved him somewhere.
Yeah.
And he holds out a hand and asks if she'll come with him. And she says yes. So it's, that was, like, her giving consent for the Transvenio mm-hmm. forever.
That's never going to be an issue, I'm sure.
So he does, he transvenios them into the underworld. And she puts her shoulders back and starts to walk forward and hopes the kingdom of the wicked is ready for a vengeful queen. Dun, dun, dun!
I do love the ending. That's a good, good line.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, my issue is that, like, I don't really understand, I don't 100% understand the point of her plan. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't understand the, like, I guess she's agree. I don't know.
I think it's like proximity to the people who were responsible for Victoria's death. And she's like, well, Victoria can't do it. If this could be part of the prophecy to save the world, I may as well do that too. I don't know.
Yeah.
And like, there's no real, I almost needed her to, like, sit down and figure this out in her head so that I could follow her reasoning.
Yeah.
But she doesn't, so we just kind of have to guess.
And there's just, like, yeah, and there's just so much to it. Like, there's a prophecy, there's a curse, there's a, like, a week, like, it just seems like there's so much shit going mm-hmm. on. You know what I mean? Like, there's a prophecy about two twins, and, like, they have to sacrifice themselves so the world doesn't end. Then there's also a curse on princes of hell. What's going to happen if the curse doesn't break? Then there's also, like, the doors of hell. The gates of hell are weakening. Mm-hmm. And, like, it just, there's just so much. And then, like, the brides are, like, the brides are being murdered. And, like,
and, well, so, who is this? Who is the big bad?
Werewolves. And, yeah, there's just, like, there's so much.
Yeah. Which is, like, I already said, like, I listened to this book when it first came out on Libby. And then, like, however long later when the second one came out, I started listening to that one. And I was like, wait, I don't know anything. Because there's just so much to it. Like, I really needed to read it with my eyes to understand yes. it. And, like, even now I still have questions. But I'm like, I almost need to go into the second book much sooner so that I don't forget everything.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just, there's just so much going on, and, like, all these different groups, like, the monastery, like, Brother Carmine, yeah. and the werewolves, and, like, everybody has a different, like, a different motivation. Mm-hmm. And, like, greed feels a kind of way, envy feels a kind of way, like, what's lust, why was he there?
Yeah,
like,
why was he...
What was the point other than to put her in this depressive state? What was the point of the depressive state?
Yeah. And, like...
So, I just...
I was kind of, like... I finished this book and I was kind of mad because I was like, now she's going to marry Pride. She's not going to get with his brother. And, like, obviously yeah. that's the relationship I'm rooting for this whole book, is her and Wrath. So now you finish this book and you're like, what the fuck? Now there's some other guy. I don't want him. So, you know.
And, like...
They're half married!
As somebody who was... Yes, yeah.
What?
All that's left is for them to, like, have sex.
Yeah. So...
That's all they have to do. And then they're officially
married. So how is she supposed to marry somebody else?
And, like... This is the thing, too, is as somebody who has read the rest of the books, and I know where the story goes, so coming back and reading this book, I'm only more confused.
That's not good. That's bad.
Like, I almost feel like I need to read it again just to be like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Because I remember what happens next. And now I'm going back and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And, like, there are things that are, like, I feel like the author, as good as this is, I'm not debating that this series was good. It was obviously good. I read the other two books.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
I might add. So, like, this, and I texted you and I was like, oh my God, the things that happen. And, like, we do get answers for things. Mm-hmm. Right? Like. Again, I'm not debating, but I feel like what the author tried to do was create this convoluted story that all wraps up at the end. And, like, for us to be like, oh, my God, this was really that, and this was really that. But it's almost like she forgot exactly what she said in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are still questions.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So. But, again, I still highly recommend that you continue reading because the story, like, it's, like, it's mind-blowing, like, where the
story
goes.
And it gets spicier, right?
And, like, it is not, 100% it gets spicier. And also, like, it does not, where it is, where it ends now, like, you have no idea
where it's going,
like,
to go, yeah.
It doesn't, like, sort of how in the beginning of Throne of Glass, and you're like, yeah, this is it. And then when you get to, like Queen of Shadows and stuff, or like Air of Fire and Queen of Shadows, you're like, oh shit, this is like a complete, like,
180. Yeah,
180. It's sort of like that, yeah, a little bit. So, like, you need to read it because, like, it's so good where it goes. But, like, now that I've reread after reading the second and third book, and then going back and reading this one, I'm like, there are things that I'm just like, what?
That's fair.
Like,
and, like, I think that's a common thing for authors too, because, like, as you're developing, like, generally they write the first book, they publish it, and then they have an idea of what they're going to write in the next book, but they don't, like, you don't finish the series before you publish the first book. So, like, sometimes they change their ideas in the second and third book, and then they do lose track of what they might have originally thought when they put out the first book. So, like, I get it. But yeah, I'll definitely read it. And I think, like, we'll probably do the second book sooner rather than later because we really enjoyed this series. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I do highly recommend. However, I have some qualms.
Yeah.
And I'll probably forget about them by the time we do book two because that's just how my life works. So, yeah, we're going to wrap it up for this week. If you want to get in touch with us and share your thoughts on anything you heard in our episodes, or if you have any book suggestions, please reach out to us by email at coffeeandcoread@gmail.com or on Instagram or Facebook at coffeeandcoread and coffee.coread on TikTok.
So next week, we're going to be starting a new book.
Yay!
We're going to be doing A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas, and we're going to do chapters 1 to 13. So make sure you follow along, and if you're enjoying our chats, don't forget to follow, rate, and review wherever you get our content. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you on the next page.